What makes a city great? Could be tall buildings, could be the absence of tall buildings, good public transportation, lively gathering places. Each Tuesday this month, Morning Edition listeners hear about cities from a variety of people who live in them, study them, grow up in them, or write about them. NPR's special correspondent Susan Stamberg begins with the New Yorker magazine's former correspondent in Paris.
Adam Gopnik spent the last 5 years of the 20th century in Paris. Now he lives in New York. But Gopnik knows he'll always have Paris. In his recent book, Paris to the Moon, Gopnik writes, "Most people who love Paris love it because the first time they came, they ate something better than they had ever eaten before. The food is marvelous, the light at sunset on the Seine, even the dogs understand French." But Adam Gopnik has a brighter idea about the City of Light.
I think what makes a city great is some kind of dialogue between the monumental past and the present. And I think Paris has that to a greater degree than any city I know. The thing about Paris is that it's a very, very tight, it's small. Paris is a smallish city. You can walk from one end of Paris fairly easily within 2.5-3 hours. What makes it extraordinary is this density of monuments from one end of it to another. One of my favorite places to stand in Paris is right on the corner of the Rue Royale, and just as it enters the Place de la Concorde. And what's great is you can see the obelisk from ancient Egypt, which stands in the middle, and it looks sort of directly out so that in your eye, it's exactly the same size as the Eiffel Tower, which is just across the river on the left bank.
Ha.
And that kind of dialogue between the obelisk and the tower is constantly going on in Paris, between the buildings of the 17th century building and 19th century building. It stopped short, unfortunately, about 1908.
But why unfortunately? I mean, the modern parts of Paris where there are high-rises are hideous.
Hideous beyond words, hideous beyond belief.
Well, how much does scale have to do with it? The fact, again, of the absence of skyscrapers, so you can relate to a city that's just a little bit taller than you are.
Well, that's so, of course. But, you know, if you think about it, the Eiffel Tower, of course, was though it's now signature, and it is the Eiffel Tower, can I add, is truly one of the most beautiful buildings in the world. And no matter how many times you see it or experience it, you're stunned by it. And the thing that struck me after 5 years of looking at it is it's the only building I know that's both masculine and feminine. That, you know, it's both a phallic upthrust, and it's unbelievable, and it's a graceful bodice and throat. It's both those things at once. And so, you know, and that was said at the time. That's why all the right-minded aesthetes of the time objected to it, because they said it will totally destroy the scale of Paris. I think what makes it work is that there's one of them. There's just one of them.
Mm. What about basic human services? Does a great city have to have places where you can buy great bread, great dessert, great coffee?
I think food is probably the key to architecture. It's the undiscussed element, but I think it's the central one. The weird thing in Paris, in my experience, is that unlike New York, which has a great deal of variety built into it, Paris is remarkably uniform. If you go to any neighborhood in Paris, any shopping street in Paris, you're likely to find the same things. There's a big cafe on the corner. There's a smaller kind of mom-and-pop cafe 3 or 4 doors away. There's a fishmonger's. There's a butcher's. And there's always a lingerie store, too. That's one of the great unsolved mysteries of Paris. Women have to wear 4 or 5 sets of underwear at once, it seems to me, to support all the lingerie stores that exist in Paris.
Let's talk about quality of life and interactions. You write very interestingly about loneliness in a big city and aloneness. And you talk about the comforting loneliness of life in New York. It's something that you found yourself missing tremendously as you were living in Paris. Why? And what's the difference? What is it about that comforting loneliness?
Paris has a stage set quality, at least it always did for me. It has a presentational quality. It's expressed both in the architecture, the way when you walk into the Luxembourg Gardens, for instance. Everything is arranged in terms of radial centers, little circles. So everything is sort of knowable. Everything is sort of seeable. And one always has a sense that one will be seen, in fact, that one won't disappear. Hmm. Compare that to Central Park, for instance. It's very, very hard to figure out where everything goes. You ask people, where's the Ramble? And they have all kinds of weird guesses about where it is because we don't know it in that simple grid-like way. And as a consequence, it's in the most literal sense, it's easy to get lost in Central Park. And it's easy to get lost in a broader, in a more metaphysical sense, in New York generally. That is, that you can disappear. You have anonymity. Anonymity is the easiest thing to get in New York.
Mm. But you also say that in Paris, if you live there for a while, no relationship is anonymous. Yes. So if you go to the butcher, you have to tell him how your son is feeling. And if you go to the boulangerie, you have to tell them, is your wife back yet from the visit that she took to Lyon?
If you have a good relationship with anyone at a cafe, for instance, it's 15 minutes of handshaking. It's lovely, and it's also sort of, I wouldn't want to say it's irksome. It's burdensome in a certain way, because it puts the burden, all the burdens of intense communication with people. That sense that you have in American cities, particularly in New York, that you can just disappear is much harder to get in Paris.
We are being listened to by millions of people who live in small towns. And what you are describing so much are properties of the small town and how interesting that you can find it in a big place like Paris, but hardly in New York.
Yes. Well, you know what's strange about that is it's absolutely right. Paris is a series of small towns in that way. It's a series of shopping streets and residential neighborhoods around them. What's odd is, you know, E.B. White back in the 40s writing about New York described it in exactly the same way. And I wonder if, in fact, that the past 60 years hasn't seen a lot of that evaporate in New York. Things cost too much. It's very, very hard to keep a little business going in New York. If that hasn't helped uproot it here while it still is present in Paris.
Is a great city always a great place to live, Adam Gopnik?
I'm sort of in a state of crisis about that right now, having lived most of my life in, well, Montreal, Philadelphia, Paris, and now back in New York. I would never live any place but a city, and if I can arrange it, never anywhere but New York and Paris. But I also think that the cost of city life becomes more intense as you grow older.
You begin to notice what you've lost, Adam Gopnik says. You miss empty spaces as you age, a certain simplicity erased by all the dense variety of urban life. For others, the cost of noise, traffic, grit gets higher with passing years, the sense there's so much to cope with. But at the start of his 5 years in Paris, Adam Gopnik wrote, "The hardest thing to convey is how lovely it all is and how that loveliness seems all you need." I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News, Washington.